Okay, folks. Last time, we delved into the wonders of real property.
Get some food? Get some food.
We talked about what real property is. It's not intellectual property. It's not personal property. It's immovable property. It's land and things attached to land. That's simple. Why is it important? Because everything in our life comes from the real property. If it's food, if it's housing, water, all of these things come from real property. As a result, over history, it has been wealth, power, and life. Okay? There's so valuable that we think of property, real property, not only in terms of possessions and future possession, but in terms of time. You don't really think of personal property in terms of time. It's not wealthy enough. I didn't see your money.
Okay.
You got to come up with it. And you don't have to wear it.
Okay.
Everybody's got credit for their costumes, so if you need to take off your hat or your banana, it's up to you. You're more than welcome. It's hot. I'm in this ridiculous outfit. Anybody ever see my cousin Benny? I wore this ridiculous thing for real property is important, means wealth, means power, means life. Everything we have, our housing, our food, comes from real property. Tonight's case, which is involving the Salem witch trials, is all about property. Talk about that when we get there. As we said, you have possessory and non-possessory estates. We'll talk more about that. But one of the things that has to stay with you from last week is the fact that real property is so valuable that unlike personal property, we can separate it in time. Separate it in time. Okay? Because slices of time allow interest in property. It's a collection of rights. Okay? We talked about the fact that unlike personal property, you can share your rights in real property. You can own it with other people. Now, technically, you can own personal property with other people too. What few people do? Why? It's not as valuable as real property. Real property you can own with other people. There's three ways you can own it, those joint ownerships. First is tenancy by the entirety. You have to be husband and wife. You have to be married, because under the new statute, you can be husband, wife and wife. But traditionally it's been husband and wife in order to own it by tenancy the entirety. If you are not married, you cannot own property in that manner. Even if you're living together, if you're in a committed relationship, all that, doesn't count. You have to be married in order to own it by tenancy the entirety. The second area is joint tenancies. Joint tenancies offer much of the same rights as tenancy in entirety, but not all of them. Tenancy in entirety is the highest way and has the most rights. And lastly, you have tenants in common. Whereas joint tenancy and tenancy by the entirety allow for right of succession. That means if you die, the person who you own it with gets the property free and clear by operation of law. With tenants in common, you don't. It
goes to your heirs. You don't get to pick as a joint tenant or as the entirety to just substitute somebody else. With a tenant in common, you can do that. You can sell it. So that's shared rights in land. Lastly, we talked about real property taxes. Real property taxes finance local governments and schools. They are very oppressive. Why? Because it doesn't matter how much you make or earn, it only matters how much the value of the property is. So you could have bought that house 50 years ago and paid it all off over the course of your life, invested your whole life savings in it, but now not have a lot of income and you can't afford to live in it anymore. So it's very regressive, very oppressive. As a result of that, the state of New York, and by the way, only localities and school districts get to impose a real property tax. The state does not impose real property taxes. The federal government does not impose real property taxes. Only the local governments and school districts. And that's where it finances. They love real property taxes because they can guarantee how much money they're getting. With an income tax, your incomes may fluctuate. When we have economic downturns, receivables, which is the amount people pay in taxes, go way down. That never changes with a real property tax. Okay? Who wants a Starburst? Raise your hand. Anybody? Snickers bar. Hold on. Starburst. I hope I didn't hurt you. Okay. One more time. Step out in the middle. Tonight, we're going to talk about three areas. We're going to talk about estates and land, future interest is when we break up the property in terms of time. Remember your rights of deput, exclude possession, use, and transfer? With real property, you get to add an extra T for time. Did you get some food? Come on down and get some food. We're also going to finish up with what we call title limitation rules. Because real property is so valuable and meaningful, not just to you who own it, but to society as a whole, why? They're not making any more. So as a result of that, society does not want people to control their property from beyond the grave for a long period of time. You get to use your real property basically any way you want as long as you don't hurt anybody. To hurt somebody, you limit it. But as long as you don't hurt anybody, you can use it however you want. You can limit that use however you want. And you can limit that use to future owners. But we don't want you to be able to extend that limitation forever. Okay, the property is valuable, we don't want that limit. So as a result of that, we have what we call title limitation rules. Okay? And that's what we're going to talk about last tonight. Then of course we'll do our kids. Okay. With real property, you got to think of it in two steps. Do you possess it now? Do you have it in your hands? And when do you get the rights of possession? So
So it's a two-step dance, possession and time. There are four major types of ownership interests. That's how you get to exercise your rights. In possessory interests, we're going to go through each one of these because they're important, and you'll understand why when we get to it. The first one is fee simple absolute. With fee simple absolute, that's the way that society wants you to own your property, because you have all the input rights. You are not limited whatsoever. With a fee simple absolute, you get every right to that property. If we cannot figure out from the deed, that's that magic document that tells you what rights you have. Remember, we don't do livery of season anymore where they cut out the sod. It's all in the deed. The fee simple absolute is presumed if we can't figure out if there's any limitation. It's the default manner. Why? Because we want people to use property in its highest and best use. Secondly, then we drop down. Each one of these has less uses of their property. The second one is what we call the defeasible estates. That's a fee simple determinable and the fee simple subject to a condition precedent or the executory interest. Thirdly, we have a fee tail. Fee tails do not exist anymore. We tell you what they are, even though they don't exist anymore. Anybody know why we do? Because when you go to read the deed of the property, it may be a fee tail, and you need to know what that means. Why? It doesn't exist anymore. It's now a fee simple absolute, but you need to know that, because otherwise you might confuse it with a determinable or a condition. Okay? But fee tails don't exist anymore because of the fact that they are basically a tax dodge. And a long time ago, the state said we can't do that. Lastly, we have life estates. That's an issue of time. A life estate says you get all the interest in that property for a lifetime. It could be your lifetime, or it could be somebody else's lifetime. If it's your lifetime, it's as long as you live. If it's somebody else's lifetime, it's called pour entre, which is a French term meaning for the life of another. Why would you ever want to do it for a life of another? Let's say grandma is sick. Grandma needs somebody to care for her. Grandma will say, you get to live in my house, own my house, or as long as I'm alive. After I die, I want it to go to somebody else, but to take care of me as an incentive, you get to have the house. Okay? Pour entre vie is usually in situations where you're doing something for that life of the person that is the duration. We have non-possessory interests of land. All those above, you possess. You get to use, you get to live on, you get to own, you get to do things with. But with respect to non-possessory, there's four of these that we're going to get really in depth on in a future class. But we have non-possessory interest too. You don't possess the land. It's not yours. But you get a right to use it. Remember, property is a collection of rights. With respect to non-possessory interest, you don't own the land. You don't have rights to the land for complete ownership. You only have a right to do something with it. An easement is where I have the right to basically use the land for a limited purpose. If I'm a gas company, I get to run my gas line under your lawn so I can deliver my gas. Do they own that property? No, they don't. In order to run that gas line or the cable line or any other type of electrical line,
They have to get an easement from me. Why? Because you own the property, otherwise you're trespassing. So that's an easement. Similarly, let's say I have a landlocked piece of property, and the only way I can get to it is to drive over yours. I can get an easement from you so I can drive over your property to get to mine. Okay? That way I'm not trespassing. That's an easement. A profit is where you have some kind of natural resource that I want. I'm Mobil, I'm Exxon, I'm Shell Oil Company. You have natural gas. You have oil on your property. I don't want to own your property. I just want to take the oil out. If I'm a water company and you have a natural spring under your property, I can tap into that natural spring and pay you what they call a profit to be able to take it. That is extracting a natural resource from your property for the purpose of using it. Okay? Covenants and servitudes are negative types of easements. Basically, what you'll do is you own the property in front of mine. I have a gorgeous view of the lake. But if you put up an 18-foot high fence, I won't get to see the lake anymore. So I can take a covenant or a servitude on your property and say, I'll pay you $5,000 and you can never put up that fence. Okay? It's a negative use of your property so that I get to use mine in the way that I want to. Covenants and servitudes are interrelated with other pieces of property. Okay. We talked about fee last time. Fee is in front of these, meaning that you're the landowner. You're the one who owns the land. You have title to it. And obviously the first one is fee simple absolute. Now, we talked that how do you determine what kind of ownership rights you have in this real property? It's in the deed. The deed starts off with it. And in the deed, it's a written document, it will tell you two things. Those two things will tell you how you own it. Words of purchase, that means who owns the property, who has those rights, and who's giving those rights to you, the previous property owner. So the first one is who. The second is words of limitation. So if they wish to limit those rights in any manner or for any time, that's the second piece. Words of purchase, words of limitation. Let's go through them. The first one, fee simple absolute, defeasible estates, fee tail, and life estate. Let's talk about these magic words with fee simple absolute. What is fee simple absolute? You get every single right in a land if it is a fee simple absolute. It's a present possessory interest. That means you own the land right now and you possess it. Okay? It's yours and you got it now. It's the highest estate in land. Every other estate comes from fee simple absolute. It invests you with all possible rights. Every one of the put rights plus the T for time, you get them all. Okay? It lasts forever because the key for time to get with it. So if I grant you my property in fee simple absolute, you have all those rights forever for the end of time. Can you limit it on the next guy? You bet. But that's you, not me, doing it. So when you take it, you have all the rights. It's the form of ownership everybody wants. Why? Because it gives you all those rights. And if you cannot tell what form the ownership is in, it defaults to this. Society wants you to use your property in the fullest best use. That's why it's the default ownership.
How do you tell on the deed that it is fee simple absolute? It says to grantee and their heirs. Simple. It's simple. Hence, fee simple absolute. To you and your heirs. So when I look to buy my house, I want it fee simple absolute. It says to Bob Farley and his heirs. Period. Okay? No limitations, nothing. If it says to Bob and his heirs, it's fee simple absolute. That's the way the deed will read. Words of purchase to Bob. Words of limitation and their heirs. Those words of limitation are not limiting. That's why it's open. And it's forever. Okay? It's forever. To aid in their heirs means you have every right in your property. Okay? That's fee simple absolute. It's the way you want to own your property. And again, it lasts for the end of time. Okay? What are the critical attributes? Alienable. You can sell it. You can gift it. You can do anything you want with it. It's reducible. That means I can turn it into a life estate for somebody else when I sell it. I can turn it into a defeasible estate. Okay? I can reduce it to a lessable estate. I can devise it. That means I can give it in a will. And it lasts forever. It's the best way to own property. Okay? Now, after fee simple absolute comes the ownership interest with limitations. The first one is fee simple determinable. It has what we call a possibility of reverter. That's confusing language. Why? Because with a fee simple determinable, if the condition exists, it automatically reverts back to the grantor. The grantor's being the original owner. Okay? It says possibility of reverter. The possibility doesn't relate to whether it will go back. It relates to the circumstance that may or may not happen that will cause it to go back. Okay? Possibility of reverter means if you have this condition occur, it automatically goes back to the grantor. I'll give you an example. I sell you my home, but I hate dry cleaners. I think they're the bane of existence. I really don't, but let's say I do. They're wonderful. They're really great people. I don't mean to disparage dry cleaners, but just for an example, okay? I don't like dry cleaners, so I say, I'm going to give you my home, I'm going to sell it to you, and I sell it to you at a reduced price, so long as you never turn that home into a dry cleaning establishment. Okay? I can say, I'll sell it to you so long as you never paint the house orange. Okay? You like orange? It's okay. So that's anybody know what the best color is called? No. Anybody know what the Mets color is called? When they formed the Mets, they had just lost their two other baseball teams, the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants. Brooklyn Dodgers played in Brooklyn. The New York Giants played in Manhattan. Okay? And when these two teams left in the late 50s, everybody was sad because they lost their baseball game. Okay? So when they formed the New York Mets in 1962, before our war, they brought the two colors of the two teams. The Giants had the black and orange, and the Dodgers were blue and white. So that's how the Mets got the colors of the New York. I turn around and I say, you can have my house so long as you never pay an orange. That is a fee simple determinable. If you paint that house orange, what happens? It automatically, don't pass gold, don't pass $200, automatically comes back to me. Okay? It's the grant. What happens if Bob is the Supreme Debitor? Okay? Then it goes to my heirs. Automatically. Boom. You take that out of orange, boom, it's gone. Okay? That's a fee simple determiner. It will have that language in the deed. To you and your heirs for so long as you don't do X. Okay? Or until you do X. Then it automatically comes back. Fee simple determinable automatically reverts. Okay? What are the words of purchase? To friend. What are the words of limitation? And their heirs for so long as. That's what the condition comes up. Okay? This too will last forever. So if you never paint that orange, if you never turn it into a dry cleaner, you have all the rights of that home forever. You ever heard of it? Yes. Correct. Whatever you do, I cannot do something that's illegal. I can't, or they're in the South, particularly, after the Civil War, people would turn around and say, you can own that house forever until you sell it to a former slave. That's violating the public policy, that won't stand up. Okay? Similarly, if I turn around and say that you can have it, but, and we'll get to this in a minute with the restrictions, but you can never sell it. Okay? It's got to stay in the family. You got to sell something to family. That's known as restrictive covenant, will not be upheld. Okay? So it's got to be a lawful, legitimate reason. Who wants chocolate chip cookies? Well, automatic upon its return. Okay. It too, like a fee simple absolute, is alienable. That means you can sell it. But if you sell it, any of these defeasible estates, if you sell it, it contains that condition with it for the next guy. Okay? You cannot get these estates by selling them or converting them back to fee simple absolute. Okay? Now there's a way that they become fee simple absolute over time. We'll talk about that before our case. That is title limitation rules. Okay? But until that time occurs, you have the ability to sell it, but it carries this determinable with it. It's reducible. So if you want to turn it over to a life estate, has less rights. You can. But again, they can't paint it orange, they can't turn it into a dry cleaner. What happens if you do? It goes right back. Okay?
How long does it last? Fee simple absolute lasts forever. This lasts forever
until that condition exists. Okay? So it can last forever, but it can also be brought back. Okay. A fee simple subject to a condition subsequent is like a fee simple determinable. The difference here is, instead of an automatic reversion back to the owner, it gives the owner what we call a right of re-entry. That means it's not automatic. So if I say that you have a condition subsequent, what ends up happening is I have to say, do I really want to take it back because you turned it into a dry cleaner? Do I really want to take it back because of the fact you put it, made it orange? Okay? Let me go back. The language there is upon the condition now. The difference between these two is minimal. The difference here is it's not automatic. The original owner or their heirs has to exercise it. It's not automatic. Okay? A right of re-entry can be waived. All of a sudden I decide I like orange, or I love dry cleaners, or my kids now have that right of re-entry because I passed away, and they get it through their estate. Guess what? They love orange. My youngest daughter is her favorite color. Okay? Turn around, she loves it. So as a result of that, she may say, hey, listen, I want more orange houses. You get to keep it. With a fee simple determinable, even if my daughter loved orange, it comes back to her. Guess what? She gets a house the color she wants. Okay? With this, you have to turn around and exercise. Okay? Magic words to A, that is the person who's buying it, and the heirs upon the condition then. Okay, that's the limitation. Again, it's alienable, reducible, and divisible, but lasts until the condition arises and the right of the entry, re-entry, is exercised. So what if I don't exercise that right of re-entry? Does it go back to being a fee simple absolute? No. But you don't have to give it back, because I haven't exercised my right yet. Okay? Yes? There's a time frame with respect to the title limitation rules that we'll get to at the end of class. Okay? Lastly, we have a fee simple subject to an executory interest. That is a defeasible estate. It's like a fee simple determinable. But instead of going back to the owner, which is called reversion, what do you do when you revert? What happens if you revert to your child? You go back. Okay? So the reversion, it goes back to who? The original owner. And reversion goes back to the original owner. Okay? With a executory interest, it doesn't go back to the owner, it goes back to who the original owner appoints. Okay? Same as a determinable, but in that case, you paint the house orange. I say in the deed that it doesn't go back to me, but it goes to my friend Fred. Okay? So Fred then gets the property, not me. Okay? Now, possibility of reverters. Remember, they're automatic. And rights of reentry, to your point, have been limited in most states to foster the marketability of title. We do not want property to be restricted for long periods of time. Why? We want people to use property for highest and best use, to be able to sell it for things. We don't want to restrict it. It's a balancing test. We want people to be able to use their property in any way that they want, but we also want property to be free and open. That's why we have these what we call title limitation rules, and we'll talk about those, as I said, in our very last unit. They're a direct statutory preclusion, usually 30 years is how long they last. There's a section of law called the Rule Against Perpetuities, which has more malpractice suits on it because nobody understands what it means. What it basically is you can't keep the property for more than three generations with this restriction. Okay? It's called 21 years plus lives in being. And what that works out to, because generations were usually 21 years, now they've gotten longer, but 21 years plus lives in being means you usually have two generations alive at once, sometimes three, but usually have two plus another 21 years, that's three generations, and that's what it was intended. Rule in Shelley's case, remainder goes to heirs of their body, we'll talk about that, and doctrine of war of the airtime. Okay, last. Second or last, sorry. Detail. Details don't exist anymore, as we said in our opening. But you need to know what they are. It's to grantee and heirs of their body. Remember, a fee simple absolute is to grantee and their heirs. What's the difference? This was intended to be a tax dodge. When you die, remember we talked a little bit last week on real property taxes. The real property taxes were the only taxes that require you to pay taxes on something you own instead of something you acquire, like income. Okay? The other exception of that is estate taxes. You have to pay if you're particularly if you're very wealthy, because that way the exclusions don't apply. You have to pay a tax to the government when you die on all the stuff you've collected. It's called an estate tax. Now, why did I say that with real property taxes, it's the only time where you have to pay taxes on something you have rather than something you acquire? Because estate taxes are you paying it. Why? You're dead. You're not going to pay something when you're dead. Who pays it? The heirs of your estate. So technically they're acquiring it. Okay? Even though it's charged on your estate. With respect to a detail, what they tried to do, it was kind of being cute, too cute by half. They turned around and said, when I'm selling my property, I'm making two dispositions. I'm giving the present interest to you for your life, basically giving you a life estate, and the rest of the property to your heirs. So when I do fee simple absolute, I say to you and your heirs. That means you get to own it forever. And if you die, your heirs own it. Here, they were saying they're going to make two separate dispositions. I'm going to give you a present possessory interest in the property, and I'm going to give your children, your heirs, a future interest. After you die, they get it. Now, what's the difference? You're saying it's two different grants from me, as opposed to a grant going from you to your children because you died. Okay? I'm giving you a grant, I'm giving your children a grant. And as a result of that, what don't you have to pay? Estate taxes. Okay? Why? Because your children didn't get it from your estate. They got it from me. So it would be exempt from estate taxes. Does the government like it when you avoid taxes? Not so much. So what did they do? Back in England, before we were even a country, when all these rules came up, they said, guess what? This is a tax dodge. It doesn't count. We're going to call this fee simple absolute, even though it's different language. So when you see that language in the deed to grantee and heirs of their body, just clip off of their body because it's the same thing. It's now viewed as fee simple absolute. Okay. Why do we tell it? Because when you do a title search, you can see this language in the title. So you got to be careful what it means. Okay? Alright. Lastly, life estate. A life estate grants you all the rights in the property for the term of a life. So if I say to you, John, for your life, you get the property for the period that you're alive. Okay? Once you die, it goes back to me. Now, if I'm not alive, it goes to my kids. You are limiting it by a time frame for the life of the person. Okay? I can also do it for the life of someone else. I can do it for the life of the grantee, that's the person getting it, or I can do it for the life of the third person. We talked about that briefly a second ago. Like if we say, John, you got a lovely grandma, we want you to take care of her, she's all alone, would you be willing to do that if we gave you free room and board just to watch her and you get to live in that house rent-free forever as long as she's alive? So four offering days for the life of another. Okay? We generally do that. And out of that, we know that that person's going to be well cared for, because otherwise, you're out of your suckers. Okay? You don't want grandma to die because you're not going to get the house. Matter of fact, you're going to lose the house. Okay? So it's an incentive there. Okay? Two ways you can have a life estate. For the life of the grantee, for the life of another. What are the words of purchase? 2A, for life. Okay, that's a life estate. Non-possessory estates, as we said, are estates where you do not presently possess them, and in most cases, you never will. You get the right to use them. Remember, this is why property is a collection of rights. You're not getting the title to the property itself. You're getting the ability to use them. There's four of them that we'll talk about in depth in a future unit. Easements, profits, covenants, and servitude. Okay. Now, that's real property titles. Let's talk now about the time issue, because that is important in property as well. Remember, with real property, it's e-put plus time. That add an extra T for time. Okay? What are future interests? You're going to get the property sometime, you're right to use it, sometime in the future. What are these life estates? Life estates comes back to you when the person dies. Right? So I, as the grantor, will have a future interest in that property if I give it to you for life. Why? I get it back after you die. If I die, my children have a future interest. What does that mean? They're going to get that property in the future. All a future interest is you're going to get the rights to that property. Not right now, but sometime in the future. Sometimes this may never happen. With a life estate, you know it's going to happen, because the person's going to die sometime. But with possibility of reverters and rights of reentry, which are the other two, or executory interests, those are speculative whether they'll happen. You don't know if anybody's ever going to paint that house orange. You don't know if they're ever going to turn it into a dry clean. It may or may not happen. But if it does, you have an interest in it.
And that interest is in the future. Okay? A remainder is
that part of the rights that you get that are in the future. A reversion is a special type of remainder. Again, what happens when you revert? Go back, right? A reversion means the property goes back to the original property. Okay? A remainder is when that property goes back to someone. It may be the original owner, maybe somebody else. Okay? As a result, all reversions are remainders. But not all remainders are reversions. Why? Because it goes to somebody else. Let's go through what these estates in time are. Okay? They're all in the future. Okay?
Future interest just means you're going to get the property or have a right in the property sometime in the future. It's that estate in time. Okay? Present possessory interest means you possess it right now. A future interest means you're going to possess it sometime in the future. Okay? It's a two-step dance, possession and time. Okay? As we said, a reversion is when the property goes back to the original owner.
If I turn to you and I say, I don't want that house ever being painted orange, you paint it orange, it goes back to me. Okay? Under a condition subsequent or under a determiner. Okay? Possibility reverted. That's a reversion. It goes back to me. With an executory interest, when I say opposed to someone else, that's not a reversion. That's a remainder. Why? Because it's not going back to the original owner. Okay?
Future interests
confuse the heck out of lawsuits. They're trying to wrap their arms around it. It's a simple thing. Any of you who learned math as a small child know about remainders. It's what's left over. If I give you a grant and you don't have all those rights to that property, what's left over is the remainder. So if I say you can have my property so long as you never paint it orange, painting it orange is what is left over. Because what happens when you paint it orange? It goes back to the original owner or it goes to some other third party. Okay? That's the future interest. If I'm the owner and give you a limited estate, if I give you a life estate or I give you a determinable, then I have a future interest. Okay?
All right. Simple as that. It's not hard. Okay. Lastly,
as we said, property is valuable. That's why we go through and tell you that it's wealth, it's power, it's life. Okay? Because it's so valuable, society wants you to be able to use it at your fullest and best use.
To your point, which was so good, we don't restrict it as a result forever. So we've come up with what we call four title limitation rules, which say when you have these title limitation rules, you can't restrict it forever. And there's four of them.
Spoiler alert. I will ask you to name these on the file.
Okay? I'm not going to ask you to define it. Okay? But we'll ask you what the rule against perpetuities is.
But I'm not going to ask you to define all of these. But I am going to ask you to name them. Rule in Shelley's case. Doctrine of worthy or title. Rule against perpetuities. And rule against restraints on alienation. They all make sense. And what do? They all seek to promote marketable title. That means you to exercise all rights in the property and ensure that the real property is not controlled for any significant time from beyond the grave. Okay.
Rule in Shelley's case. This is the rule that you usually learn right after the Fox case, Pearson versus Post, law school. Rule in Shelley's case is now a fee simple absolute. What do they do? To A for life with a remainder in A's heirs. Similar to a fee tail. Same thing. Instead of turning around and saying that this was to A and heirs of their body, two separate grants, they give two separate grants by defining one as a remainder.
Just like the fee tail, the rule in Shelley's case, which was in 1581, so it was a long time ago, says it's fee simple absolute. So when you see to A for life with the remainder in A's heirs, guess what? That is a fee simple absolute. Okay? Again, it ends the tax dodge. Okay. Doctrine of worthy or title is similar, except for where you turn around and have it go to the grantee's children, it goes to the grantor's children. Okay? And again, what they do here is say to A with life with a reversion to O, not a remainder. Why did they change this?
Again, it's a tax dodge, because if I have a remainder, it's a separate grant. They want it to go through the estate of the owner, and as a result of that, it's a reversion to owner. Not something that happens much.
Again, this is focused on not avoiding taxes. The most important one that we have in the title limitation rules is we don't want that restriction that says you can't paint that house orange. You can't raise German Shepherd puppies at the house. Okay? I can put in anything as long as it's legal. Okay? We don't want that restriction in there forever. I'll give you an example. Who here has been to Wolf Road for Colony Center?
What? Okay. When I was a little boy, and I know that's a long time ago, but when I was a little boy, Wolf Road did not have all the shopping plazas. Okay? Colony Center was golf course. Okay? Wolf Road was nothing but paint bars. Okay? Literally, you should go down there and look at it and see the pigs. Okay? You're kind of stuck. But we go there. Okay? That's what the look is. Is it that anymore? It's nothing but shopping center after shopping center today, right? So as a result of that, what does this tell you? Times change. Land use changes. We shouldn't have things remain the same forever. So if you were a pig farmer on the Wolf Road, should you be able, when you sell that farm, to say, it comes back to me forever if you don't raise pigs on that farm. You try to turn it into a shopping center, it comes back to me. Well, we want you to be able to control your property. but not forever or beyond the grave. That's what we're doing. So what do? We have what is called the rule against perpetuities. It says no interest, which is what you're passing with the deed,
shall vest, if at all,
and has so be void,
if it does not end within 21 years plus lives and means.
Who are lives and means? Anybody alive in the chain of this transaction, not anybody alive on planet Earth, but if you're selling the property, it's the children, you, grandpa, any of those lives plus 21 years. Now, one important issue about the rule against perpetuities that expands it and is counterintuitive to a lot of political correctness, but it's an important legal rule. It says unborn children that are born alive count as a life and being that can extend it way beyond what most lives are. Okay? So that is essentially a three-generation rule. We don't want you controlling the property from beyond the grave for more than that. So what does this mean? If I put in my deed that it's a fee simple determinable automatically comes back, or a condition subsequent will come back if I exercise it, that if you don't operate it as a pig farm, it comes back to me. After lives and means plus 21 years at the time of the deed, guess what? It eviscerates. And that means that that property reverts back to a piece of lapsed. Which means after the rule against perpetuity expires, 21 years plus lives and means, you don't have to make that a pig farm. And you can sell it to somebody who's not. Well, you have, if you do a condition subsequently, it's a right of re-entry, right? If you do a determinable, it's automatic. So if I automatically get it, guess what? It comes back to me no matter what. If I have a right of re-entry, can I then go to you and say, you don't have the right to take the property? You pay me some money and I won't do it. You can't do it. Okay? So, at the end of the day, though, realize that after 21 years plus lives of being, the condition's gone. Yes.
If you thought it goes back to it,
sorry? If it goes back to when you have a reversion, which this is, okay, with a condition, with a piece of the terminal, goes back to the original owner, if that person has died, it goes back to their heirs. So, with me, it'll go to my wife and my two children. Okay?
Yeah, so that if your children are at home, they can bring whatever children set after the life.
Guess what? They can go back to them and they that condition is removed. Okay? Because what happens when it goes back? The condition is gone. Why? Because it goes back to the original piece of lobster. After that condition is subsequent, if I turn around and have a piece of the terminal with a possibility to revert, remember it automatically reverts, right? Once it automatically reverts, there's no more condition. Why? Because it was a piece of the last two, I put the condition on, now that condition's gone, because it goes back to me, as it was, okay? And the same with my kids, okay? Remember, 21 years plus lives and means, which basically says
three generations, that condition is gone. Okay? An interest is vested when we know for sure that someone will receive or fail to receive the interest. Okay? Pursuant to the lives and being, it includes the holder of the interest. That means the person who it goes back to. The person creating the interest. The person who is granting you the property. They may be different people. Any person who can affect the condition precedent. That means the people who are the owners of the property. And any person can affect the identity of the whole. As we said,
this is a unborn baby born alive, all considered lives of being. This is a flowchart of what can happen with rule against what to do. Don't look at it too long because your eyes will blur over. It is complex. But it basically says we don't want people controlling real property from beyond the grave for more than basically three generations. Okay?
Okay. Now, lastly,
so you have rule Shelley's case, okay? You've got your avoidable title, rule against perpetuities, can't have that exclusion last for more than three generations. Lastly, rules against restraints on alienation.
You do not, as public policy, want to restrict a property from ever being used.
So if I turn around and put the deed, that is a condition that you can never sell the property. You can only sell it to a family member. What happens if all the family members die out? Okay? I'm the last Farley in my line. Okay? I have two dogs. They may keep my name, they may not, I don't know. But at the end of the day, I don't have any sons. So as a result of that, I don't have George Washington. And as a result of that, what if I turn around and tell my kids they can only do it to somebody named Farley, who's of my lineage, that dies out? That property can never be sold, theoretically. Okay? So as a result of that, society says that's a bad idea. So if we put in a condition that says you cannot transfer that property freely, guess what? That's deemed as void as if it wasn't in there. Okay? It's disabling. It's a forfeiture. Restraint, okay? There's promissory restraints. That can sometimes be upheld, and we'll talk about that in a second, okay? All disabling restraints, as we said, void. They're bad. They're gone. Even if they exist in the document, you don't have to follow them, okay? Partial restraints for a limited time and a limited distance can be viewed under a limited circumstance for reasonable purpose can be viewed as okay. To give you an example, if I say that you get my property, but you can only sell it to a Farley in the next 3 years. After that, you sell it to anybody else you want. But if you sell it within 3 years, then you got to sell it to a partner. That would probably be upheld. Okay? Why? Because it's a reasonable time. Okay? And the lesser amount of time that you have there, if I put it for 1 year, definitely be upheld. 3 years, you're getting kind of sketchy. Okay? But if you're reasonable about the time and the purpose, okay, then you could probably have it upheld. Okay?
forfeiture restraints on life estates can be viewed as valid. Why? Because you know that it's a limited estate to start with. Okay? So that's kind of an exception to the rule. Okay? Commercial transactions, again, we give them more leeway. Okay? If you're selling your business property and you say, you cannot sell this to anyone who's my competitor. Again, with a limited purpose and a limited duration, that will probably be upheld. So if I say, you can't sell to any of my competitors within 15 miles or within 5 years, something like that is given more leeway and it's viewed as a bargain for agreement, and that is something that can be deemed as valid. Okay? Similar to a right of first refusal, two can be viewed as okay. Okay? There's something known as the spendthrift clause, which has also been upheld. I grant you this property, but if you turn out, I know that you're one of my kids, and you have a problem with gambling, and I say that they cannot turn around and sell the property for the purpose of paying off their gambling debts, something like that is sometimes better. Okay? But overall, disabling restraints, limitations on who you can sell your property to, generally are not acceptable. Okay? What are these four? Rule in Shelley's case, doctrine of worthier title, rule against perpetuities, 21 years plus lives of mean, and lastly, rule against restraints on alienation. I can't turn around and say you can't sell the property. All those have one singular purpose. We don't want people to control property from beyond the grave for a significant time. Okay, why don't we take a 5-minute break? Come on down and get the rest of the candy and get rid of it for me, and then we'll move.